Good morning. Welcome to the round table. And just going over
genealogy.
That's right, Judy. Genealogy. That's a good way of putting it. Yes. Good morning. Welcome to the round table and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. And we are thrilled Alan's back. You're safe. You're sound. It's good to have you back. We missed you.
Yeah, we had a bad incident yesterday at the airport.
What happened?
I had given Roselle the keys to the car.
Oh, here we go. Okay.
And she looked in the handbag and they weren't there. And then she looked in her big bag, you know, that she carries, and it weren't there. And it was terrible. We had two cars. One was left here. And so then at the last moment, after total panic, she reached into her valise, and there they were. Point being, you should never put your car keys in your luggage, in your checked luggage, because sometimes the checked luggage doesn't come back. You know what I mean?
You never know what's going to happen, do you? Well,
you know, I just want to say Alan looks refreshed
and
healthy.
He?
Far right healthier and more rested than I've seen him in months.
You look terrific, too.
Well, I'm just saying you look
you always
relaxed.
Do.
You should take vacation more often because it's good for you.
Don't say that. It only encouraged Roselle.
Well, Alan, welcome back. It's great to have you here. Judy Badrick is here as well. She is the editor of the Daily Gazette, and it's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you very much.
Always glad to be here.
Siena College professor of business and economics, Aaron Pasidi, is here. Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, Joe. Thanks.
Second time on the program. I was not here the first time, so it's very nice to work with you and have you join our ranks.
It's nice to be here.
And chairman of his department.
Yes.
Yeah. Doesn't get any better than that.
Depends on who you ask, right?
Well, that's debatable.
All right. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. We have a lot of serious discussions to talk about this morning. Before we dive in, however, I do want to talk about the lockbox and do a little business, get that out of the way. We'll take a break, and then we'll come back and talk about what's going on. But some good news and bad news when it comes to the lockbox.
Right. And the last thing we want to do is get it out of the way, because if we get it out of the way, will never survive as an institution. And that is for everybody to understand. Without you, we can't make this. And you are what made the station. You are what brought us together. You have been there from the very beginning when we were all scared to death. Today I'm talking to Tim Snyder. We're going to do an interview, who was the guy who said Trump is planning a putsch. You know, it's interesting. I think he may have been. I think now things are going so badly for him that, you know, it is, to my way of thinking, virtually impossible. And even the Republicans in Congress are standing up. But the point really is, if you really believe in this station, and we need you desperately right now, we have a long way to go. We have less than 2 weeks, and we need $250,000. Incredibly, we've already got $250,000 in the lockbox, which is astounding. But now we need $250,000, which means nobody can be excused, none of us. $5, $10, or $1,000, whatever you can do, we are so dependent on you to do it.
Did you mention the—
Okay.
Yeah.
Towards that end, Joe.
Yes.
We are so happy because the Bernard and Ann Spitzer Trust has pledged to donate $25,000. But here's the hitch. Only if we can raise the $500,000 by 6 a.m. on June 5th, the first day of our fund drive. So the fact that the Spitzers have said that they would do this, is that the Trust has said that they would do this, is really helpful. So if you can help us, now's the time to do it, because we don't want to lose that money.
$25,000 that we have to make before June 5th. We welcome you to call in. WAMC.org is the online way of doing it, or you can call 1-800-323-9262. For people wondering, by the way, we're down to our last 30. I think we have just less than 30 tickets for Malcolm Nance. That is a $100 ticket premium for all that money goes into the lockbox. It's a lockbox exclusive. And on a day where we're going to talk and start talking about terrorism in our world, Malcolm was all over last night, and we'll be talking about many of these topics and what we can do, and of course, our own concerns about Russia and the world stage. So that'll be June 15th at 9 to 10:30, a live roundtable at the Linda, and it's a $100 ticket pledge. And again, we started with 200 plus tickets, and we're down to like the last 28.
But so, even so, it doesn't come out in terms of our need of $250,000 to do this. It'll be about $20,000 worth. Is that right?
Well, that's true. But by the same token, if people want in on it, they only have those opportunities, and then because then they write to you, they write to me, and then they say, "Can we get in?" And then you can't.
Yeah, and then when we say you can't, they say, "Well, you terrible, ugly,
right. Yeah,
short
we,
man."
We, yes, they say that to me too. Well. It's WAMC.org, 1-800-323-9262. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start talking about what happened in Britain last night and, of course, what is going on with the president's trip overseas and much, much more. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. Again, we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. And Alan Chartok is here, Judy Patrick, and Aaron Pacitti. We welcome your letters and are glad that you are with us this morning. So an explosion that appeared to be a suicide bombing killed at least 22 people last night and wounded 59 others at an Ariana Grande concert filled with adoring adolescent fans in what the police were treating as a terrorist attack. Panic and mayhem seized the crowd at the Manchester Arena as the blast reverberated through the building just as the show was ending and pink balloons were dropping from the rafters in a signature flourish by Grande, a 23-year-old American pop star on an international tour. Traumatized concertgoers, including children separated from parents, screamed and fled what appeared to be the deadliest episode of terrorism in Britain since the 2005 London Transit bombings. This morning, Theresa May said, "All acts of terrorism are cowardly attacks on innocent people, but this attack stands out for its appalling, sickening cowardice, deliberately targeting innocent, defenseless children and young people who should have been enjoying one of the most memorable nights of their young lives." President Trump said, quote, "I won't call them monsters because they would like that term. They would think that's a great name. I will call them, from now on, losers. They're losers. And we'll have more of them, but they're losers. Just remember that."
Well, it does defy speech. It is so terrible, so awful, so despicable that it is really hard to comprehend that human beings, people who consider themselves, by the way, religious and faithful human beings, could do that to anyone. It is something that I think we have to worry about because you can't allow it to happen. New York City, it has not really happened, right? Other than 9/11. They tried once. An alert citizen saw the smoke coming out of the thing in Times Square. But you have to be vigilant. But when you're vigilant, it means that somebody's civil liberties are going to be taken away from them. And that is something that you worry about in an open society because that allows some of the bad people to sort of get their way in terms of where we may be going.
They talked about how tight the security was into the arena, so people couldn't bring backpacks, had to check all sorts of things, but this actually happened outside the arena.
Did it
right outside the arena.
There's a vestibule between the arena and Victoria Station, a vestibule, and where the box office would be, and they believe that the bomb was almost perfectly timed as far as in their goal of wreaking the most carnage of immediately when the show started and the doors opened is when the attack went off. But it was in that vestibule outside between those two Victoria Station as people go underground and leaving the concert venue.
And it all makes us heart sick when we see the photos of the little girls who were hurt or killed in this tragedy. But you also think, you know, these kinds of things happen all over the world to people of all ages, and you know, every life is valuable. But when it hits young kids, it's especially hurtful.
And we do not have a list yet of those who died in this attack. Many injured, obviously. So we don't know what that makeup is, but we can only imagine that it's a mix of young and old, but with parents and
now,
young
I heard
children.
That, I heard show that they think that the bomber himself was killed.
Oh yes, yes. How they immediately determined that that it was a suicide bomber because they found the remnants.
Yeah, and now ISIS is taking claim for the attack.
Right,
I saw this morning. But you know, I go back to Trump's comment of calling them losers, and he's just recruiting more people into this instead of talking about democratic and political reforms that could be used to. You know, minimize this or give, you know, disenfranchised minorities voices. And he's just adding fuel to the fire, I think. And it's just such a backwards approach.
Yeah, we really do need to talk about the root causes of these of this and address it in a civilized way.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah, the social and economic problems that prompt this to begin with. This isn't just people trying to be mean to each other. They're reacting to, you know, decades or generations of what they view as oppression.
Exactly. So the answer to that is?
The example is to address the roots, address the oppression. Try to make people accept one another. Try to deal with some of these economic issues that are really repressing these communities. I think it's simple to say, but I mean, there are very complicated causes for all of this. I don't think
If you look at the you know, countries where they're coming from, youth unemployment rates are 25-50%. These are people with very limited economic opportunity. There's no democratic political institutions to give them a voice, and without fixing those, you're not going to eliminate the problem.
But do you guys think that ISIS, who are, after all, killers in my mind, do you think ISIS would be put out of business if things got better in their home countries? In other words, I think that they would be more ticked off than ever if there was a change in the economic system. Professor, you know more about this than I do, but...
Well, it's, you know, a marathon, not a sprint, and that these things start with one reform at a time, and you just kind of minimize the recruiting pool to the point where you might not get rid of them, but you at least, you know, can corral these attacks and make them less likely.
It's far too easy, I think, for ISIS to recruit a suicide bomber. I mean, what goes into that to convince someone to strap a bomb onto their chest and blow themselves up?
And now with all of the, you know, anti-Muslim rhetoric that's coming out of our own president, the rise of these xenophobic anti-immigrant parties, that all that's doing is helping recruit more people to this, and demonizing them or calling them losers is not going to make any progress whatsoever in solving the problem.
Interesting, because intuitively, and I'm probably wrong in this, I take an entirely different tack than you guys do, which is I don't think you can demonize them too much. And, you know, it just means that you have to be eternally vigilant, and you really have to have a plan to deal not only, as you say, Aaron, and you are so right, with making things better there, but you also have to be quite severe in terms of a program on how you're going to stop them and the killers that they are. Seems to me, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think we should lay off on the superstructure of the power structure in place that's recruiting these suicide bombers or lusting after this power. But there is a groundswell of societal problems that need to be addressed, and that's what's leading to this. I don't think it's the religion. I don't think this is an ISIS religion thing. I think these people are into power, but I do think that the reason they're able to recruit little kids into their base is that their families are struggling to keep food on the table.
Yeah, these are 16, 17, 18-year-old kids who are being, and you say recruited, but a lot of times it is just one-offs. That's what we've been seeing most recently, is people who are doing it to get the attention of ISIS and other organizations.
And they have been radicalized to that point.
What's to be said except that this is really awful? This is just so awful.
Yeah, and we have to be careful about how we react to it, too. That it, you can't have a, let's find out who these people are first. I mean, ISIS is claiming responsibility. Let's make sure that ISIS really was responsible. And then talk a little, and don't make blanket accusations against
Well, I don't know that I can go along with you here, Judy. If ISIS claims the credit for it, which they are. Then you got to assume that when they go out and they make blanket calls, and they've been doing this for a long time, everybody should just, you know, if you can strap a bomb onto your back, you should do it.
No, but what Judy's saying, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but then don't go after all Muslims.
I don't think I said go after.
Well, no, that's what she was saying.
But that's the political rhetoric that's happening now.
Yeah. Correct. Last night on Twitter, very quickly, you saw lots of tweets about the Muslim cab drivers are giving people a free ride. There are Muslim doctors tending to the sick and to the injured. It was interesting on social media how there was that initial, let's get some positive out of this as well as negative.
I get it.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation, and we'll also talk about what else is in the news and some new information in regards to the president and trying to tamper the investigation. According to the Washington Post, we'll get into that story as well. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is here, Judy Patrick, Aaron Pasitti, and your letters. Don't forget the lockbox, wamc.org, 1-800-323-9262. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, Aaron Pasitti. And we welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. And we have a few letters this morning. We'll start with those, and then we'll move on to some other topics as well.
Richard says, I have to give Trump credit for his response to the Manchester attack. Let's stop calling them terrorists and start calling them losers. Anybody want to? We've already talked about that.
We think losers is, we don't think that's constructive. I don't think that's constructive. I also think it's reminiscent of my sixth grade year where you call people losers. That's silly.
Yeah. We had somebody here who used to call, write everybody letters and say, you're a loser. Okay, so Andrew. So
I don't know who you mean, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so Andrew says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
There seems to be a pattern that has emerged with the Trump administration. Big scandalous stories break somewhere between 5 and 7 p.m. on the weekend. Does the panel have any insights as to why? Is it a conscious decision from the media to release stories at this hour? Or is this how the White House staff copes with a bad day?
You know, as someone who sits on the edge of my seat every day, because we put a print newspaper out and we have to plan for the A1, I can tell you that it's not 5 to 7 on the weekends. It's every day last week happened. And usually the way a reporter's day is structured, they start working. They may have been working on the story for a day or two, but as soon as they get it done, they want it online as fast as they can. It's just if they had it done at 10 o'clock, they would put it out at 10
o'clock. So what you're really saying to Andrew, who just wrote that letter, is hell no.
No, not true.
False news.
We put the stories up. But they call it digital first for a reason. Get those stories out as fast as you can. And in fact, one day there was a race between the New York Times and the Washington Post to see who could get that story up the fastest. I mean, they are going at breakneck speed. They want to get it accurate, but it's silly sometimes to try to beat somebody by 5 minutes or so, but that's the nature of my business.
Yeah, it is. It is. Then they get the bragging rights. Steve says, doesn't happen often, but I agree 100% with Alan's comments. Oh, boy. Why didn't you just say Alan's? Okay. Doesn't happen often, but I agree 100% with Alan's comments regarding the need to be quite severe in condemning Islamist terrorists. Mollycoddling them by coaching our condemnation is soft language is not, and that's in capital letters, not going to make them more friendly towards us. It is as dangerous to think that it will, and more dangerous to think that thinking as basis for foreign policy, and that's from Steve.
Well, a 16-year war in the Middle East hasn't done much besides intensify the problem. So.
Yeah.
Hasn't worked very well.
Well, you're the business economist and you know your stuff. But one of the things that occurs to me is you take a look at this terrible, terrible budget that is coming out now.
This is the federal
budget.
Only
thing that goes up is the amount of money we are spending on more nuclear weapons, more nuclear submarines, more nuclear battleships that we don't need, as at the same time that we are doing exactly what you want us not to do, which is to do to our people what has been done around the world, which is to take away health care and the ability to go to school and do all of that. It is really disgusting. Jennifer says, rather than calling them losers, has anyone tried to make a direct plea to those young people who are being recruited to suggest alternative actions, encourage them to search their values? Is killing others going to improve your situation? Could empathy be a solution? Well, what do you think, gang?
I think that it's difficult to make that appeal, especially, I mean, this is something that builds up over years. And often, the suicide bombers, they know that their families are going to be taken care of. And there's some pride that goes with it for their families. I mean, it's such a, it's not just saying, oh, please don't, and they won't do it. This is a whole, and just condemning that whole movement is not the solution. You can condemn it for another. My grandchildren are going to be dealing with this. I think right. To really solve this and get some peace, we need to deal with the fundamental issues.
Aaron?
Yeah, structural reforms are a big part of this. I mean, military action is only going to form more radical, increasingly active splinter groups. We're not going to get. Military action is not going to solve the problem alone.
I don't mind.
I'm not saying that there shouldn't be that, but I'm saying, like, in conjunction with that, you need actual political and economic reforms. And what we did in Afghanistan created just a crony state with the Karzai brothers. So that makes the problem worse, not better.
And I keep thinking about how this all works. I believe that there are times you need a military. No two ways about it, as you do, Aaron. But on the other hand, we are basing our entire economy based on the military industrial congressional complex here. I know we've said it so many times that people want to puke, but the fact of the matter is, it is true. And we don't need to take all of those resources away from all those people who need it in order to do it. It's just too much. Good morning. Absolutely terrible what happened, says Anthony. Wouldn't agree with Trump's words of calling the bombers losers. Cowards would be more accurate. Since they draw attention, I wouldn't say these bombers lost in their motives. Cowards take action in irrational ways to draw attention since they can't articulate in fashions acceptable for social cooperation or understanding. And that's from Anthony. And there have been a lot of them this morning that are...
Yeah, I've just never been one for name calling. Cowards, losers, monsters.
That doesn't accomplish much.
Doesn't do much.
No, I mean, and also I think it's timing too. I mean, right now you have to work on finding out more information. There's still people who have children who have not been identified, and they don't know where they are, and the parents don't know where their kids are, and kids don't know where their parents are, and so there's a lot of work to do before we get to a lot of that stuff.
I want to go back to that other, says, doesn't anybody try to get to these kids? A lot of Muslims have tried to get to people within their own religion and to make that point. And I don't think that gets the coverage it needs either.
True. We want to, I want to move the subject along, and we welcome your letters on this topic, but I also want to talk about one of the letters that came in of talking about these stories that break on weekends. And well, a good one broke last night, so it certainly has been understandably overshadowed by the terrorist attack in Britain. But President Trump asked two of the nation's top intelligence officials in March to help him push back against an FBI investigation into possible coordination between his campaign and the Russian government. That, according to current and former officials, Trump made separate appeals to the Director of National Intelligence, Daniel Coats, and to Admiral Michael Rogers, the Director of the National Security Agency, urging them to publicly deny the existence of any evidence of collusion during the 2016 election. Coats and Rogers refused to comply with the request, which they both deemed to be inappropriate, according to two current and two former officials who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss private communications with the president. Trump sought the assistance of Coats and Rogers after FBI Director James Comey told the House Intelligence Committee on March 20th that the FBI was investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts.
So do you think he did that because he believed it was not true?
No, I think when he came in, Judy, I think he thought that he was omnipotent, that he could do anything and he could get away with anything, and that he's been so successful in his business career, parenthesis, six bankruptcies, I think it was six.
Yeah, so a few bailouts here and there.
Yeah, so successful that it would be that he could do it because he was now going to be the commander-in-chief, he was going to be the president, and he was going to be able to be basically the dictator. And that has turned out not to be true for him.
So we have used this term, and many have used this. Certainly, Democrats have talked about obstruction of justice. While we do not have a full-blown fire here, we certainly have a hell of a lot of smoke, don't we?
Oh, yeah. No, I think he's done.
I mean, it's just one after the other of these stories of, like, this is just going deeper and deeper into, you know, requesting that the investigation just be stopped and public admittances of things that are not true. And
just because you don't know any better isn't a defense, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Ignorance is not a valid defense.
Not when you're president.
Right. Yeah, I mean, maybe
mental illnesses, which I think is a
and there's this discussion about
at this point.
Is he getting good legal counsel too? Did someone brief him about basic rules of etiquette? But remember, one of the reasons he got elected was people said, we want something different. We want somebody to break the norms. They did indeed get that. Did he not know any better? Yeah, that is not a good excuse.
But if he's a narcissist, which I think we're all sort of playing around with here, and people don't like psychoanalytic terms, mm-hmm. then you think nothing that you do is off limits. And that's part of it. But I'm very concerned with here is that the Democrats may be playing a bad game. Now, what I mean by that is they want that Congress back. And I don't blame them, because if at least one House becomes Democratic, then you really have a different situation with subpoenas and going after people and all the rest of it. But the downside of that is that they're saying, no, it's too early to impeach. It's too early to really go here because they don't want this all out of the way by the time the congressional elections come around. And that's a little bit of a dangerous game.
Yeah, and it also harkens back to this whole issue, can government be run like a business? And I think he was trying to run government like a business, or he still is trying to run government, do everything like a business. And
I would add only run it like one of his businesses.
One of his businesses.
You know, I think certainly the chair of the business department could tell us that it's different than running it as a normal business.
Is it giving
a
business a bad name?
No. I mean, you hear these things about, running the country like a business is much more efficient and all of this. But, you know, businesses don't have to answer to the public. They answer to their shareholders. They answer to their board. Having a functional understanding of governance and the way government is structured should be a prerequisite to be elected to any office. And here we have the leader of the free world who has no idea how this happens.
Yeah.
And he's surrounding himself with,
children.
Children, yes. Family, people who he trusts with absolutely no expertise in any of these areas.
Yes, but also you are onto something, and I think you are right, Aaron. When you choose a head of the EPA who is a climate denier, when you do all of those things, you have basically created an antithetical government by a minority candidate who got fewer votes than the opponent, and it's just inexplicable that you would take down the government, you would take away people's Medicare, you would take away people's Medicaid, you would take away people's health care or education by putting a Betsy DeVos, into an office. It's just mind-boggling. And when I wake up in the morning and I say, this has got to be a nightmare.
I don't think it's mind-boggling. I don't think Trump has an ideology. I don't think he particularly cares about one thing or another just so long as he's enriching himself, and that's been his MO his entire life. But his advisors, Steve Bannon and that crew, they're actually trying to destroy democratic institutions, and that's why they're doing this. And Trump just seems to be, you know, you stroke his ego and he's all of a sudden on board with whatever it is you're trying to do. And I think it's a very dangerous situation here.
I don't know, Aaron. It seems to me that there is a functional answer to what you just said, which is if you're against climate and if you are against the environment and if you are against, the ability to give people health care or education or food for little children who need it, that's a philosophy.
A lot of the proposals are conservative proposals. I mean, reducing Medicaid spending, sure, is a conservative proposal, and so there is a lot of the conservative agenda that's being put forth in this budget, reducing food stamps, reducing. I don't think they're going to touch Medicare, but Medicaid spending definitely.
I think they'd like to check. Medicare really is a third rail, but and they will try to reduce Medicare spending. If they can, in the name of efficiency, but it'll really cut into seniors. But let's assume you're right. Medicaid is terrible enough, you know, in itself. And we're here, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars.
Right, but that's a fundamental political discussion about how much aid government should be providing the poor and the, right, the needy. And that's a legitimate public discussion. But what happens with Trump is he goes off the rails, as we say, and does silly things or stupid things like try to influence the independent FBI investigation into, you know, how Russia investigated or interfered.
But to Aaron's point, you have this core of his people who tend to be doing all of that while we're paying attention to the plate spinning and the crisis of the day.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, I don't know that it is a legitimate discussion, Judy, for whatever. I mean, how do you take food away from a child?
Well, the pros and cons of the degree with which you supplement the needs of the poor. Certainly, we both agree that, you know, the society has a responsibility to take care of all its citizens. I think what you hear from the conservatives is the degree with which you take care of all the citizens. Do they need the same level of care? I'm not arguing one way or the other for it, but I can understand that there is that sentiment out there that needs to be discussed.
Yes, but here you had Donald Trump running for president of the United States saying to potential black voters, they should vote for me because what have they got to lose? Now, here's the two things that probably shouldn't be said, but I'm going to say them anyway. One, and that is how many people who should have voted didn't vote? Number one.
Millions.
Yeah. No, we're talking about, without question.
But that's nothing new.
No, it's nothing new, but if it had happened in this case, Donald Trump would not be president of the United States. So there are too many people who are saying of the group that didn't vote, and those are our poorest, our people of color, in greater proportions. I'm not saying nobody voted, but in greater proportions. If those people had voted, what you are seeing happening right now would not. So when Trump talks about, I need to play to my base, it's my base, it's my base, it's my base, those are not the people who are in his base, and they're going to suffer as a result of it.
Oh, yeah,
and maybe
are.
A lesson should come out of this.
We have to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation. We also welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Quick note, and I'm sure we'll have this at the top of the hour, but NPR is reporting that Sir Roger Moore has passed away at the age of 89.
Wow, 89.
Best known as James Bond in the 1970s and 80s. And,
how about Maverick?
Passed away. Maverick? He was in Maverick?
I think he was Maverick's
brother. No, he was the Saint, right?
Saint? I think he may have been Maverick's brother. Maybe I'm wrong.
James Garner's brother?
No, in the series, it was too much James Garner.
Yeah.
What can I say?
Okay.
I'll Google it.
I don't think so, but we'll certainly check.
I'm probably wrong.
Roger Moore, dead at 89, and we'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Hanford Mills Museum, East Meredith, New York, offering tours and demonstrations of its water-powered sawmill, grist mill, and woodworking shop Wednesday through Sunday, hanfordmills.org. Northeast Acura, Route 9, Latham, New York, featuring line of Acuras, including the MDX and RDX, and new or pre-owned Acuras and other pre-owned vehicles, northeastacura.com to shop or schedule service. The Spot 518, a weekly arts, entertainment, and cultural publication for the Capital Region, available online in newsstands and venues, thespot518.com. Spring Antiques at Rhinebeck, Memorial Day weekend, 140 exhibitors of period antiques to mid-century modern, lost photos exhibit of 1960s rock star, and more. Dutchess County Fairgrounds, May 27th and 28th, barnstar.com. And the Schoharie County Beverage Trail, offering distilled, brewed, and fermented beverages from locally grown ingredients. Sampling, shopping, and dining along the trail, SchoharieCountyBeverageTrail.com.
Alan's right.
Yay!
He was, Roger Moore was added to the cast. This is, Garner left the series after the third season because he, due to a legal dispute, which I'm sure was more of a financial dispute. But anyway, Roger Moore added to the cast as their cousin, Bo Maverick.
Who knew?
So, chocolate. There you go, Alan.
You know, you should start hitting the bars for trivia night. I bet you could make a little bit of dough.
No, here's why I know it, because now on the Gunsmoke channel, they also play Maverick, don't you see? And as a result of that, and don't you see? And as a result of that, I've been watching him.
Because you can't watch CNN all the time.
Because I knew him as Simon Templar in The Saint. Remember that?
Oh yeah, that was great.
Yeah, another great show. All right, let us get back to letters. Oh, thank God. Here's some letters for Alan, and we'll get to those, and then we'll have a news break at the top of the hour.
Okay. Michael says, I reject the search for a socioeconomic explanation for ISIS activities. ISIS is a nihilist cult. We should be discussing them as such. And that's from Michael. Thank you, Michael. And John says, there's no reason that would make killings like this one understandable. Societal changes need to be addressed, of course, but one can go into many directions to pursue that end. Education and humanity helping us evolve into a non-killing species is one way to go. But meanwhile, killing innocents is not the way to get anywhere. These people are monsters, and that's from Esther. I agree with her. Good morning, panel. As it pointed out on the PBS NewsHour last night, neither Trump's speech to the Arabs nor his proposed budget addresses root causes of terrorism. His solution is exclusively militaristic. My thought is that the proposed budget cuts, if enacted, have the potential to create the breeding ground for deep social unrest and potentially terrorists, and that's Rosalind from Clifton Park. And Debbie says, the German magazine Der Spiegel has an editorial calling for Trump's removal as soon as possible, calling him a laughingstock and a danger to the world, do you think? And that's from Debbie.
He's a danger to the country, at least. Well, yeah, probably the world.
But now he's spreading them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It is interesting how despised the man is in countries all over the world, much more so than anything we've ever seen, in my opinion. And so everybody's got it now. In Saudi Arabia, of course, that great democratic republic where where Trump has spent so much time kissing the king's posterior and getting medals and all the rest of it, where women can't drive cars and where people are executed summarily for marrying the wrong person and having their heads cut off. Those are his friends. But the people in Saudi Arabia don't like him. And that raises problems, of course, for any ruler when you're in dissonance with the people who are following you.
When you look at the trip, so Israel, next up is the Vatican, right?
Correct.
Is that correct? So we'll see how that goes and what we can expect along the way, although I assume that...
the Pope is already signaling that he's not going to be mean to him.
He said he will have sincere discussions. That was his term, sincere discussions.
So as somebody who teaches at a Franciscan school... you know, the Pope's focus on social and economic justice is, you know, diametrically opposed to Trump's latest budget, which is, you know, treating the poor with less respect and less opportunity.
And what do you find with your kids at Siena? Is it Siena?
Yeah.
At Siena, what do you find with your kids? Are they with you on that understanding of what it takes to be a good Franciscan?
You know, you can interpret that religiously or you can interpret that as just a general life philosophy. And I think a lot of them do have this, you know, there's a economics and business should not be your moral compass. It's, you know, there are higher things people should be looking to. And, you know, fortunately, we have a president that thinks that, too. So that's great.
It's Sienna.
No.
Oh.
Of the United States. But no, yes, absolutely, it's Sienna. Yes, Brother Ed's wonderful. But I was talking about the
Brother Ed,
the president of the United States, which was obviously sarcastic.
Judy noted this at the beginning of the panel, but both Judy, myself, and Aaron, all from Washington County. All hail from Washington County. So that's we've got a good bumper crop here today. Very nice.
I think we have a gang sign.
Yeah, so that's right. Yes, absolutely. Did you read all those or do you have more?
I don't know. There's one I think I read, but I want to read the first sentence again. It doesn't happen often, but I agree with Alan 100% about his comments. You know.
I think it's the third time you've read that.
Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We have news to get to, and when we come back, we have many other topics to discuss. We will do that and much more when we come back right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. It is 3 minutes past 10 o'clock on this Tuesday, the 23rd of May. With us this morning on the panel, Alan Shartok is back. Judy Patrick is here and Aaron Pasitti from Siena College. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Quick reminder about the lockbox. We have a lockbox challenge that has been put into gear today. Which means we have $25,000 on the line.
But we're running out of time, Joe. That's what scares me. If we don't make this, uh-oh.
So we need to get halfway on the drive, $500,000. I think when we started, we were, what, 253, something like that? So we have a lot of money to make in a very short period of time.
Oh, boy.
June 5th, WAMC.org or 1-800-323-9262. Michael Flynn has pled the fifth. What do we make of this? Michael Flynn said, I'll take the fifth on the Senate subpoena as top House Democrat alleges new evidence of lies.
Okay, now I'm not a lawyer, but here's what I'm thinking. This is a fairly commonplace. You plead the fifth.
Yes.
You say, I'll testify, but you have to give me immunity. They don't want that, so that he says, I'll plead the fifth. It is now up to the prosecutors or the committee to come back to him and say, okay, what do you got?
Right.
If you got the president, we'll let you off. If you are just a BSer, we're not going to give you the buy.
And I'm not a lawyer either. And one of the things he's trying to not disclose to the committee are papers as well as documents. And he's maintaining that that is subject that he can withhold them under immunity or Fifth Amendment disclosures. But I don't think that, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but that does, I've never heard of that before.
A lot of right. people should remember, Judy, that people went to jail during the McCarthy era who pleaded the fifth. And then they were said, okay, if you rat everybody out, we'll give you immunity. And when they didn't do that, they went to jail. That's the important remembrance that comes out of it for me.
So it's interesting to see what repercussions are. I mean, you can, our Constitution allows people to say, I'm not going to testify. You have a right not to testify, and it's not an indication of guilt or innocence. So
I mean, he's been exposed so many times of just lying at this point that, you know, now that he's, you know, front and center, that I'm not surprised he took the fifth. I mean, this.
Well, no, yeah, one should not make the presumption that he's guilty because he uses his Fifth Amendment right. Nope. On the other hand, one does make that presumption.
When you're saying you're getting payment from U.S. companies for the activity in Russia, but it's coming from the Russian media. Like, at some point you start to say, there's something here.
Okay, but we can't lose sight of the fact, can we? Because I feel like sometimes we lose sight of this fact. But we can't lose sight of the fact that the president and those in the transition knew about 90% of this stuff when they named him to be head of the national security.
He told them.
Yeah.
Well, he told them, and everyone else was telling them. I mean, and there are different people even on the team. Chris Christie, who, you know, whose judgment is up for debate, but said, you got to watch out for this guy. Even people within the transition said, you have to watch out for this guy. They knew it, and they still did it. And that can't be lost here, can it?
No.
Well, one wonders why. Right? I mean, one wonders why, if they knew it, they felt so compelled to do it and what the relationship. See, somebody wrote in while I was away. I was looking at the email, and it said, since Alan is not here, I'm going to say the following. It's the Russians, the Russians, the Russians.
That is true, yes.
It's the Russians. Well, it's been the Russians from the beginning. So here's the interesting thing. There's the sun in the middle, and then the planets around it. The sun is the president. The planets around it are all these people who are now proven to have spoken to the Russians, including, his attorney general. So one wonders, right, Aaron? One wonders if the president really didn't have anything to do with the Russians. Is it true that he got money one way or another for his projects from the Russians?
Oh, yeah.
Was there a quid pro quo? That's where it's all going.
Right. So my hypothesis on that is that Putin wants sanctions lifted, and he wants free rein in getting back former Soviet territories. And with Trump, he probably sees a quid pro quo because that a lot of Trump's funding, and there was a Wall Street Journal article about a state-owned Russian bank through all of these weird transactions, or essentially funneling money from the Russian oligarchs all the way down to Trump directly, personally, and in his business. And that's a straight quid pro quo that, Trump treats Russia with a very friendly hand, whether it's, lifting some sanctions, turning a blind eye, talking bad about NATO. And in return, Trump gets adulation from a very powerful world leader and financing for his and his family's business.
Now, I couldn't agree with you more, except that the Supreme Court of the United States and others have basically said quid pro quo only means when you say it into a microphone.
Sure.
You can say, okay, it looks bad, all of this stuff. That's why John Dean and all the rest of them were so important, because once it was disclosed that he was not lying and that there were tapes to prove that what he had said, and that'll be the smoking gun here.
So that may be why Michael Flynn's testimony would be so important.
Right.
It's hard to lose. I'm less concerned about Michael Flynn doing jail time than I am with the country knowing exactly what happened.
Couldn't agree more.
And I think he may be key to finding out a lot of that information. I think the prosecutor and the intelligence committees are going to have to come to some resolution about what's more important. Did Oliver North get immunity back in the Iran-Contra
You know, that's
days?
An interesting question. I don't know.
Yep,
I don't know the answer to that.
I mean, he testified, right? But
I'm sorry to raise a question. I don't
did
know.
He get out of,
did he get out
of?
Granted limited immunity. Okay. For his congressional testimony, the law prohibited a prosecutor from using that testimony as part of a greater trial.
I mean, I see Flynn being in so deep at this point and the evidence mounting against him that this might be his power play, that he's pleading the fifth. He's going all in on, I want immunity, and if you give it to me, I'll let the, it's all coming out. And
exactly.
I don't know. It's tough to read it another way from my perspective.
Also, let me just ask this, and I'm trying not to be conspiratorial in asking this question, but you fire the guy. President Trump fires Michael Flynn, and then you do everything you can to protect him.
He's a nice guy.
Up to the point of firing your FBI director. So at what point do you look at the we're talking about the collusion with the Russians, but what about the collusion within those parties of how they're working together and for each other? Because there doesn't seem to be a fracture there between anger between one and the other.
First of all, I think it's a brilliant analysis, Joe. Second of all, what's the messaging going on to Flynn from the president? Okay, we had to do it. We had to fire you. No two ways about it. But if you behave yourself, we'll take care of you on the inside, to the point where we're gonna start calling people and risking everything by asking them to shut up about Flynn.
No.
But Flynn's a smart guy. You would think he would have given somebody a heads up saying, it's not going to look good if you fire the FBI director. It's not going to look good if you do this or that. It's actually going to hurt me more than it's going to help me.
Oh, I don't know. You can say he's a smart guy, but the smart guys really get themselves into this kind of a mess.
Good point.
Or you can look at Flynn as being involved but without a smoking gun, and that they're just using him as a fall guy, and they do take care of him at some point afterwards.
Well, it's clear that they want to,
a fall guy.
But here's a potential impeachment article. If, in fact, There was conversation between Flynn and the president, one way or the other, in which the president has basically assured Flynn will take care of you. It seems to me that's real bad.
But that doesn't need to be explicit. That could just be a... Everybody knows that. I mean, that's what happens, you know, in
Let everybody know that Aaron just winked. We can't see the wink
on the
radio.
I'm sorry, yes. On the radio, I did wink.
Yeah.
Very clumsily, but I did wink.
Winking on the radio. It's our new program on Thursday nights. Well, even when you look at how I just want to get to this because I have to admit I secretly love this story. But when President Trump denied that he revealed that Israel was the source of intelligence about a terrorist threat to commercial airliners during his meeting with Russian diplomats earlier this month, they're all saying, "I did," he said, pointing to reporters. So you have another story wrong. Never mentioned the word Israel. I never mentioned the word or name Israel. But published reports have not said that Trump identified Israel in his meeting, thereby admitting that it was Israel. And it's that kind of thing that you just – I mean, this gets back to what we were talking about earlier of, well, you can't make it up, and B –
But B, it's not convenient for Netanyahu. So Netanyahu says, sure.
Well, yeah, and he, you know, I mean, maybe I was looking far too into it, but he seemed to wince.
Right, and so Trump's position is right. He never actually said, he never said the word Israel. That's we're mincing words here because he never actually said the word.
Because McMaster said he wouldn't even have known it was Israel because we didn't tell him.
But he gave so many other details that would easily lead someone to Israel.
Okay, so David, who writes to us as a critic quite frequently, per Allen's comment, we are not building nuclear weapons. We are updating delivery systems for existing weapons, but the stockpile isn't increasing. But our ability, David, to get them there makes them more potent. We don't have to build more. We got enough if you're going to get them there in a different way. So people listen to the show, says David, and believe the things you tell them. You have responsibility to get it right. You too, David. Okay, so let's see here. Glenn says, to Alan's rhetorical question, how do you take food away from children? If you're Mick Mulvaney or Paul Ryan, the answer is with a smile on your face and a song in your heart.
But, you know, the interesting thing with the Trump budget is David Stockton, who was Reagan's budget director, said, this is one of the most ludicrous budgets we've ever seen. This is dead on arrival. Thank God Trump's out of the country to not be here and defend it. I mean, so even members of the Freedom Caucus are saying this is going too far.
Well, they've all made their deals with all those K Street lobbyists who have come running down there. They're not about to go along with this. And I think one of the great things about the development of the congressional angst about Trump is that they feel they can do it now where they didn't in the beginning. And that is a major difference.
But they don't have the political capital to do it. They might feel like they can do it. But
well, when you have Mitch McConnell, Aaron, standing up and saying, we are not going to end the filibuster for regular things in the Senate, and we have Democrats and Republicans, and he was stern, this guy, when he said it. It was, back off, Trump. We're the Congress. You're not. And that's something.
Yeah.
Aaron had it right, says Ann. Trump has no core beliefs other than himself. Trump will say to his base what they want to hear and justify anything that looks differently from that, as in the best interest, trust me. Also, people do not want to admit that they are wrong. That's from Ann. And then Jan says, why are you not even talking about the idea that Trump has symptoms of Alzheimer's? You talk about the symptoms, simplification of language, erratic behavior, and many more behaviors that indicate early onset of the disease. Yet you do not see this as an indication of sick, not evil man. The Republicans have
fair, Aaron mentioned that.
The Republicans have an agenda, and the evil people beyond Trump have a need to cover for him. Can the American people not be brave enough to admit to the world they have a truly ill man in this most important position?
We don't need to admit it. It's just unfolding before our eyes.
Well, it is interesting that no words that he uses mean anything. You know, we're going to give you more health care than you've ever had before. It's going to be better and it's cheaper. And then he takes it all away. I mean, that's incredible, isn't it? So either he's a despot or he, as some people have suggested, may have the inability to
have a firm grasp on reality.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's ever been particularly articulate, though. I mean, I don't think I don't think this is a sign of aging, or
could be.
Could be, but could I mean, he's always talked a little. He's always talked
those
like
of
a
us
rough
who
and
think
tough
it's
New Yorker.
There are those of us who just think it's plain evil, one way or the other. So if it's Alzheimer's, that's one thing. Whatever the outcome from the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, the most important man in the world, has consequences, and he has to watch what he says, and he hasn't.
And when what he tweets.
And he won't. Tweets,
and says, I would include says in the tweets.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the trip. How did it go in Israel yesterday? Anybody want to weigh in on that with the meeting with Netanyahu and... Anyone?
It
Nobody?
Seemed to go okay. I think people who were holding their breath that nothing major would happen so far, so good for the whole trip. No major mistakes. One thing I can that the social media is talking about is the fact that Melania flipped away.
Millennium. Yeah.
she slapped away his hand when he tried to hold it.
Well, that
point.
Was a good one. But that was important.
I'm not sure I saw it. I kept on looking at the
video.
No,
they said so. They said so in a paper.
No, but if you look at the video, it's hard to really see it. I mean, it doesn't look like...
The papers don't lie.
But I hate to bring it down to that level. But it seems like everyone was just kind of holding the breath in Israel. Now he goes to meet Abbas today, correct?
Yeah. So let me ask you guys a question, because you're so bright, both of you, all three of you. Let me ask you a question that is so important. Let's say Trump is in all this Trump is in all this trouble in this country, right? And he doesn't want to come back. Obviously, I wouldn't want to come back if I were him. Not now, because all this other stuff is unfolding. What if he pulls it off? What if he's able to get a peace treaty?
That's good for. That's good.
Then great. Yeah. If there's
Does it save his behind? Is the question.
I don't care that much about that. I care about peace. I mean, if it saves us, I think that process in America will go
so
forward.
So you would be, Judy, you would be willing to let him off the hook for all the crimes or misdemeanors that he may have pulled, if he can bring them through a peace treaty.
Oh, give him immunity from prosecution or something?
Asking philosophically.
Is this a lady or a tiger question? Is that what it, basically that's
door
it, right?
Door number one.
Right. Door number one or door number two.
I think peace in the Middle East is paramount.
So if he, let's just talk politically.
Hypothetically.
Let's just hypothetically and politically. He pulls it off. Is he basically, has he saved himself from all the other stuff?
No. I mean, presidents have a lot to deal with, and there's, 1,000 moving parts, and you can look at one accomplishment here, which has been the holy grail of U.S. foreign policy for a while, and if he can pull it off, which I mean, I'll bet $1,000 that he doesn't, fine, great, but that does not excuse him from
anything
else.
Does that erase possible obstruction of justice? Does that erase
and can that stop
possible collision with the Russians?
Right, Joe, and can that be stopped? No matter what. In other words, once this process has begun, you got a special prosecutor and everything else. Can that be stopped just by pure political adulation for having done the impossible?
No.
There's a lot of time left in that term, too, and there's a lot more he can do.
I mean, both good and bad.
But, I mean, if there's peace in the Middle East, you have to give credit where credit's due.
Wasn't that a good question I asked?
No, I hate hypotheticals.
But remember, he's the...
Was that a good man? Not really.
He's going after Iran pretty hard as well. So to the extent that, dealing with the Israel-Palestinian issue, he's just going to kick up a hornet's nest with Iran, and that could undo whatever peace treaties brokered over there. So
it's such a good point, because here we have this Iranian moderate who wins this election, who wants, obviously, better relationships with the United States. He goes over to Saudi Arabia, who hate the Iranians, and he worships at their feet and continues the rhetoric, the anti-Iranian rhetoric. And you wonder, is this smart? I mean, here you have an opportunity with the Iranians, and he's not going to take it.
Yeah, he's demanding, better human rights and free speech in Iran from Saudi Arabia. I mean, how are people not just laughing
I'm
at
laughing.
This? Well, yeah, okay. I mean, you know, the rest of the world. Maybe they're crying. That's
laughing on the inside.
Well,
to be old to know that song.
Let me thank all of our wonderful panel this morning. Alan, great to have you back. Aaron, thank you very much for being here. Very nice to meet you and to have you on the program, and we look forward to having you back.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much. Aaron Pacitti, who is the professor of economics at Siena College, and Daily Gazette editor Judy Patrick. Thank you, Judy.
Yeah, we're all going to hop on the bus and head back to Washington County.
Yeah, that's for carpool. It makes it so much easier.
In a couple months, we can Uber in together.
We'll be back with more show after this.